Hey guys, welcome back to Campaign War Stories. I'm Wesley Donahue. This is the podcast where we talk to folks in the political industry about campaign life, and today I'm joined by Josh Robinson. Josh would say that he's part general consultant and part content creator. I always enjoy working with and talking to Josh, so I hope you enjoy this one. All right, Josh, we're on air now. How's it going?
Hey, buddy, how you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm enjoying Charleston, South Carolina. You're no longer here. We miss you.
I know. I miss it every day, but, you know, God creates freer states like Texas. So glad to be here in Texas.
How do you get much freer than South Carolina? I mean, this is about as red as you can get.
Well, you got an income tax, man. Come on over to Texas. We'll teach you how to lower your taxes and cook barbecue.
That's a deep cut, man. Damn.
That is actually, you know, I'm going to say this knowing a lot of my Texas friends may hear this. I prefer South Carolina pulled pork barbecue over Texas. The brisket's good, but after that, I'm going South Carolina.
You know, I've just been eating it so much my entire life that we've got a Texas place called Lewis here in Charleston now.
I love Lewis. Yeah, he came from Texas.
He did. So when I get barbecue, I typically go to eat Texas barbecue because of the brisket. Because you guys do brisket and sausage. They're hot guts. They're sausage. Yeah. They don't do it right here. But I hear
it's
you.
It's so good. It's so good. Man. And I'll take the wings at home team every time.
Oh, absolutely. Where are you in Texas now?
Live in College Station, Texas, which is home of Texas A&M.
So you're still SEC.
We are. We're mentally preparing for our friends at UT joining the conference this year. So it's going to be rough. I feel like they're a little better position going our next season than we are. But you know what? We're Aggies. We're resilient. We're used to people making fun of us.
All right, so before we get in to talk about your career.
Well, before that, hold on. Congratulations to South Carolina. Y'all.
You talking about the women's team?
I'm talking about that, and then also y'all whooped Texas A&M in baseball the other night, too.
Oh, yeah?
So, yep. Well done, USC.
Yeah, no. You know, it's interesting that, like, our best sport is women's basketball, but I grew up such a basketball fan that I love it. And look, our boys made it to the tournament this year, so that's, you know, it's not a bad year for the boys, too.
Yeah.
All right. Well, the question I was about to ask you is, you were giving me shit before we hit record. You said you've listened to some episodes, and you're going to drop some knowledge or something on me.
Well, you know, let's just go and get this out there. I was listening to your podcast for a while and was listening to your sit down with our good friend Tim Cameron the other day. And it dropped a valuable piece of knowledge on me. I was working for John McCain in 2007 as basically his political field director, running the state, managing the staff and that kind of stuff. And I organized an event just outside of Myrtle Beach and Myrtle's Inlet, and it was a rough morning for the senator, and he was, you know, not feeling that great, and he came in, and we packed that VFW hall, and he made that comment of bomb, 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 Iran, and I looked back and saw the news media, and I was like, uh-oh, and so I called the guys above me on the campaign. I was like, hey, I think we may have a news story on our hands. And they're like, oh, no, that's not a big deal. And I was like, maybe. Mm-hmm. And then that thing blew up viral. And I never knew how that really got out. Turns out it was Tim Cameron.
It was. Yeah, so
it was. And I didn't even know Tim back then. Apparently he was there. I was there. Tim and I are now great friends. But when I heard that story, I called Tim up and I was like, you jackass. Like, do you know how you ruined like 2 weeks of my life? And had you not gone on Wesley's podcast, I never would have known that.
Well, I love his podcast.
This is put a little dent in our relationship.
That's why I love his podcast, because it's such a small circle that when people start telling their stories, other people connect to it. So for those that don't know, so we had a South Carolina-based website. So that's when we were mostly just trying to be South Carolina's top firm. We weren't looking at a lot of national stuff. And we had a website called The Shot. And it would put up a shot of political news every day. And it was basically our way to promote our clients and to screw with our opponents, basically. At that point, we were doing Mitt Romney. And John McCain came in and, you know, really in politics, the first viral YouTube moment was George Allen with the macaca
yeah.
Remember in Virginia? There wasn't a lot of like YouTube viral moments. And then the McCain thing happened. It wasn't the first. It might not even been the second or third, but it was definitely one of the first five like viral YouTube moments. Tim Cameron shot it, came out to the office, is like, I think this is a thing. Let's put it up on the website. Put it up on the website. Boom. Viral.
So what I'm hearing is I appreciate you helping me launch y'all's career. And I would love to know my percentage of equity in the company now.
Well, FlexPoint, FlexPoint has a better business model because they can just do buying without all the bullshit and all the people. So go get your cut from Tim.
They do. And they do a lot of work with me and they're great friends. I was like, this is a real problem. Like I took you to play golf with me at Pebble Beach last year and I didn't even know any of this. And I'd known that. I don't know if I would have invited you. So we're working through it as friends, but it was a painful week because some of the guys on the campaign thought that was a good day for the senator and other guys are like, Josh, how'd you screw this up? And I'm like, I didn't do anything. Like, well, the senator was just being the senator. Like, what did I do?
Yeah, a lot of people also don't realize that Tim and I kind of did this together. He was working for me. He was younger, but then we kind of fell in love with this internet side of politics at the same time. Yeah. But they're great guys, and they got a hell of a business model, man. Because, look, if you could do the buying without having to do the day-to-day social stuff, the fundraising, I mean, it takes me 90 people for my operation, and they can do what they do with like 15 or 20 and make way more money without the overhead. It's a brilliant model that they got going on.
It's amazing to watch. He and Keegan are very good friends of mine. Watching their rise over the last just single digit amount of years is very impressive.
Yeah, and dude, they're smart as shit. Both of them.
I agree. They're some of the best in the business.
Let's stop blowing smoke up their asses and promoting them and talk about
you. Let's not make that half of this podcast.
Right. So you've been doing this a while, man. Like how did it start?
So my second semester of my senior year, I realized I was not going to be good enough to play college golf. And I was like, I'm done with this. I'm just going to not do the golf. And I'm only going to have to go to high school for 3 hours a day. This will be perfect. I can totally just goof off my senior year. My dad said, no, you're not going to do that. You've had jobs and summer jobs. You're going to school 3 hours. You're going to find another job. So I, the next day, started working at a local car wash. And after 2 days of that, quickly realized that was not going to work well for me. And thankfully, it was the weekend. And then Sunday at church, I talked to one of our family friends who was running for district judge, and I was like, how's the campaign going? And he said, you know, it's good. I'm just overwhelmed. And I was like, do you need help? He's like, yes, I do. He's like, well, I can't pay you a lot. I was like, how much? He's like, I'll pay you $100 a week. I was like, done. That's a job. That counts.
Yep.
So I'm going to do this instead of work at the car wash. And that led to a job with the state senator that summer after that. Then I went to college and it led to other internships in DC. And just, I ended up getting a degree in finance at Texas A&M. And I thought I may do something else, but I never stopped doing campaigns. And so I quit the high school golf team and fell backwards into politics.
Love it, man. How did the TV side of this occur?
So after working campaigns across the country and running races and working in national committees, the NRCC and the RGA, decided to get out of the moving around, kind of the, you know, traveling lifestyle and try to figure out how to settle down a little bit.
Yeah.
And me and my former business partner, Casey Phillips, great guy.
Yep.
We were both just trying to figure out what we're going to do with our lives. And we decided to start a company. Like, we can be consultants. We know how to run campaigns. And that was going okay. We signed up a few clients. And our clients came to us and they were like, okay, well, what are we going to do about TV? We're like, no problem. We'll put together a budget. We'll call our friends. And no knock to anybody in our business. But at that time, we were working on some smaller races and they came back with bigger budgets. And they're like, can't you guys just figure out a solution to do this?
Yeah.
And me and Casey kind of looked at each other like, I don't know. Sure. Yeah, we'll try. So I have no problem saying I accidentally became a media vendor. And then once we realized that we could kind of create a business, and Casey and I had a great run for over a decade of modeling the GC with the messaging, and then kind of Casey taking the forefront and me kind of catching up to him, learning the media business and of how to kind of make it efficient for the client, talk about the message in the right way, but also know how, coming from the GC world, know how to be team players, because I'm a big believer in team efforts.
Yes.
I don't believe one person has all the answers. I think having collaborative conversations around a table with a candidate who ultimately gets to make their own decisions is the best way to run campaigns. And so we just started doing it. In our first year, we made 9 TV ads the entire year. 2 years later, we made over 500.
Holy shit.
And so we kind of quickly took off, and I think it was just because of a good partnership and the right kind of collaboration and the right approach of we can do GC. We don't have to. We want to do your media. We can do both, or we can stay in our lane. And it's worked out okay. And I feel blessed every day to wake up and, you know, be like, I never thought I would be here, but I get to do fun, interesting things every day.
Yeah, I mean, and sorry, by the way, I'm working from home today. My wife's car broke down, so I had to give her money. Oh. Working from home. So if you hear all that noise in the background, both Josh and those listening, my kids just got home from school, and they're stomping up and down the stairs right now. So I do apologize. Anyway, what I was going to say.
Hey, you're successful enough to have stairs in your house.
One thing you and Casey have in common is you both have a very laid back, chill style and demeanor. And I find that in politics, especially on the media side, we got a lot of divas that don't have that style. Maybe you disagree with me, but did you find that kind of laid back style demeanor helped you build the business, helped you get in with candidates, and helped you do a better job?
I think everybody has their own style, and that's what Casey and I kind of worked through, and we're, you know, both doing our own thing now, because we decided with me moving back to Texas, him doing other things, it was just kind of better to kind of go our own way, but we still partner on stuff, and that's great. But I think everybody's got their own niche.
Yeah.
And I think the one thing that I think candidates and voters, it both applies to, you can smell through the bullshit very quick.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go in and do a razzle dazzle show for a razzle dazzle client, that's not somebody I want to work for. And so I believe in just kind of going in and being who you are, and it's either going to work or it's not going to work. I don't sign up anybody over the phone. I like to look, you know, candidates I work with in the eye, meet them first. Exactly. Because my job, as I always tell them, is I'm not going to tell you what to say. That's up to you. I can help nip and tuck on the message and make it a little better. I can make it look really good, and I can deliver it very effectively through targeting, but that's up to you. And we've got to agree that we like each other, we trust each other on this project, because it's at the end of the day, it's your name on the ballot. And so I think everybody's got their own pitch, and there's guys in this business that are way more successful than I am, that do, a fancier, you know, more formal pitch and things like that. But that's, I don't know. I'm very happy since I've, you know, had a son and things like that. And life's just kind of changed. Like, I'm not, you know, I don't need the rat race. I just need to, you know, be a part of the game that I keep wanting to be a part of for some weird reason, because being in this business, I think, is odd at sometimes, but it's also a lot of fun.
Yeah. How old son, did you say?
Son, yeah, he turned 4 in January.
That's awesome, brother. So,
yeah, it's at fun age. We finished up potty training, and now we're on to all that other kind of stuff. So it's getting that weird, like, learning sports and other kind of fun things. I always say, sorry, I'm going to offend anybody on this, I don't think most men know what to do with a 2-year-old child. We're there. You're going to be present, but you don't really know what to do. Yeah. So you just show up. But once they hit that late 3, kind of 3 or 4 year, it's like, all right, You can be my buddy now.
I think you're spot on. Four is when everybody talks about the terrible twos. It's actually the terrible threes. All three of my boys, three was a fucking pain in the ass. Once they turn four, that's when things start getting fun for dad. You nailed it.
Yeah.
But like to my earlier point, I just find that, especially on the media side, there's a lot of bullshit artists, a lot of big egos. And, you know, you and Casey, I know you are separate now, but you both have that just very genuine, authentic, laid back style. And to me, that's the kind of style I want to work with, because I feel like I'm not being bullshitted by my own teammate. And I feel like in politics, you're in the trenches, you're working around the clock, you're working on, weekends and holidays. And the last thing you want to do is be in the trenches working with someone that hard, with someone you think is trying to jab you in the side and is it a bullshit artist. I like that laid back, genuine, transparent, authentic style.
I agree. I think it applies to Casey as well. Delivering a good product at a fair price, being transparent about everything, mm-hmm. and being who you are. And everybody in our industry creates their own kind of media. Everybody's got different styles. And it's not a one size fits all for every client. And I don't get upset if I lose out on a pitch, because that may just not be the right fit.
Yeah,
I always tell people that introduce me to candidates or GCs that call me, all I'll ever ask for is a pitch. I think the client's got to make their decision, because they've got to have their right deal. Do they want to run more like comedic ads? Do they want to run more like straight in your face ads? Do they want to do straight to camera? And so you just got to know what you're dealing with and work around and having those conversations, because so much of media and digital, what y'all do, and putting that in your media side as well, putting somebody's image and their name out in front of the public in mass like that is a very personal thing, and it's got to fit.
Yeah. It's just weird that you brought that up. We had this conversation yesterday with the team, with one of our clients who's a new candidate, who was concerned about the tone of some emails, which it takes a couple weeks to get the tone right. And, you're always going to make mm-hmm. missteps in the beginning. And, one of our staff's like, what's the problem? And I said, look, have empathy for this person. This person has hundreds of pieces of content going out under their name without them ever even seeing it. Like, I don't even let a company email from me go out without me approving it. Imagine being a candidate who's sending out tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of emails, not unique pieces of copy, but emails under his name, and he's not even reading them. Like, have empathy for these guys who are putting their name out there, because we're not.
Right. And they're putting their trust in you to do it right. And having those early conversations of understanding each other, making sure it's the right fit. Like, I don't need 100 clients.
Yeah.
And that's kind of my approach. And I just want to work with some good people every cycle, do a great job. God's been good to me. Business is working out okay. And I don't want to create a mega shop. That's not my vision. But there's great mega shops out there. Like, there's some guys who do great work in large shops. But I like living in Texas and being able to hang out with my kid on a Friday afternoon and, throw the ball around.
I never intended on having a mega shop. And I'm not saying we have a mega shop now, but at 90 employees, it sure feels mega. And it was by accident. I never meant for it to happen. It's just that digital kept expanding. We had our little niche. We were building websites and doing social media. Then every single aspect of the campaign became digital. Even TV, we're seeing the convergence of these two. So it's as digital grew, the company grew and is kind of becoming mega, which is weird. But, my next question, Josh, is, you've been doing this a long time, but you're still young. Like, what for you, I know this is a strange question, but what for you has been the key to longevity? Like, how are you still in it without going crazy?
Making sure that it's not your life, I think, is very important. That was one reason I decided not to live in D.C. anymore.
Me too.
Because I'd lived in D.C. off and on 4 different times, and it was great. It was awesome. I was a chief of staff on the Hill. I worked at the NRCC. I worked at the RGA. And I lived in D.C. as a professional. And then I just kind of noticed that you're running in the same people at the same restaurants and the same bars, and that became a little unhealthy for me. And so I think moving to what I call real America and being able to, you know, play golf with some guys, meet some new friends, and none of them have a single relationship to politics.
Yeah.
Like, I've got a golfing group that I play with. One's in the oil and gas business. One's an airline pilot for United. Like, awesome. So, and one guy owns a company that installs, you know, sprinkler systems in yards. And so being able to just have a normal life, I think, is very important. And being caught up in this game and hustling, I think, is very necessary in your 20s.
Yeah.
Because I think there's a high dropout rate of people that get in this business and drop out by 26, 27.
Yep.
But if you're going to stay in it past then, you're going to put in the hard work. You know, I always say I respect the people most that, you know, lived in a campaign office and ran a campaign.
Yep.
I sadly have lived in two campaign offices. Don't recommend it. But making that hustle, if you're going to do it, then make it pay off. But the payoff is then go get a life.
Now, I think you've hit the nail on the head, man. These days, are you mostly focused on the GC work, on the ad work, or a little bit of both?
Yeah, a little bit of the GC work. So it's kind of a hodgepodge. I would say the majority of our business is what I call content creation. So we make TV, we make the creative for digital, for radio, we do static ad, everything like that. We don't place it. We work with great partners like you and, you know, Tim Cameron and other good people we've referenced on that kind of stuff. So that's a lot of what we do, because I like staying in that wheelhouse on the team of then just being like, hey, I can do this. I can be a larger team player, or I'm happy here. There's a few clients that I've had for a long time that I do the GC work on as well. I believe to be a good GC, you need to talk to your client for at least an hour every day, probably.
Yeah.
During the campaign season, and you only have so many hours in a day. And so I always, when I tell my clients on the media side and the GC side, you can call me or you can call the number two of my company. One of us will pick up our phone. We're never, like, in a rare exception, we're on the airplane at the same time.
Yep.
So I want to be able to deliver that personal product. I don't have account managers, and because we run a smaller shop. It's a little more boutique. And they were doing we do corporate stuff randomly, a lot of advocacy stuff in DC. And then we've got this, you know, random project that came across our desk of this guy who's from Texas that is spending a bunch of money, wanted to talk about the debt and deficit. And he's not running for anything and is just spending money talking about, he's like Ross Perot 2.0. And so working with him and his efforts have been very exciting, and we're getting to work with y'all on that. So
I love that one, man. Fun. In fact, I'm going to call you about that one, offline. You mentioned that being outside of DC has been good for you personally and your longevity. Do you think being outside of the DC bubble has actually helped you on the work also? Like, does it make you a better GC? Does it make you a better creative to not be inside the bubble and to actually be out amongst the real people?
I think the answer to that question is yes and no. I think for business wise, it definitely has its consequences.
100%.
It's a little harder. It's a little harder to get DC business, but that's okay. We still do a lot of good DC business. But I think on the creative side, I mean, just being in Texas this year, moving back to Texas, I did, you know, a lot more in Texas this year than I had done previously, because what was amazing for me when I was based in DC or South Carolina, I would do a few races in Texas. And then the dog on me was like, oh, Josh, he's a DC guy. And I'm like,
yeah,
are you kidding me? Like, I graduated high school in Nacogdoches, Texas. So I went to Texas A&M. Like, come on.
Yeah.
But being back in Texas has helped with, you know, a lot of that. So it's a give and take kind of thing. It's kind of just picking what you want to do, but it does give you a different perspective. That's the one thing that I love about what we get to do is, you know, some of my friends always joke that Josh is the best at, like, 5-minute, you know, bar conversation trivia. It was like, oh, where are you from? Oh, you're from Janesville, Wisconsin? Well, you've been to Jake's, or have you been to Jake's across the street, or what's your favorite restaurant there? It's like, oh, have you been to, you know, Merle's Inlet? Can we talk about the VFW hall that Tim Cameron, you know, sabotaged me at? Like, so, and you can, like, being able to travel to real America is a lot of fun. And I always joke with my Democrat friends, like, Republicans don't travel to LA, Chicago, New York City, you know, for campaigns that much. Like,
yeah,
we get to go out to, you know, great parts of the country to be great people. So
that's a really good point. We got to go to some small towns that a lot of Democrats aren't showing up in.
Oh, they get right. Uncomfortable out there.
Oh, I know. Well, they should in some parts. So,
yeah,
you know, we've talked about you've done a lot, campaigns, committees. Had your thing with Casey, you have your own thing. Like, do you have a favorite story or two from your time in politics?
So I would say Tim Cameron's a great story because I didn't get up to the other day. I would say just another funny anecdote I would have is my advice I could give to anybody coming up in this business that is signing up to be a campaign manager. Do not agree to the candidate or GC taking care of your housing sight unseen. That has backfired on me multiple times.
That happens a lot. It's a good point.
Yeah, you got to be careful about that one. You'll end up in, I was in HUD housing once, which was very fun. Somebody got shot in the parking lot second week I was there. Ended up getting put in it was a house/campaign office that, apparently used to be a drug house because there was an 8x10 walk-in safe with a black light in it in the back of the house. Don't want anybody would have that in a shady part of, you know, rural East Texas. So always check the housing before you agree to them covering your housing. That would be my funny piece of advice. But I don't know, like on a serious note, I mean, looking over, you know, kind of some races and thinking about this interview, there's a race I did, been 8 years ago. It was the mayor of San Antonio. So in 2014, Julian Castro was the mayor of San Antonio. He got appointed HUD secretary under Obama. So it created a vacancy. And so the city council then has to appoint a mayor. And so San Antonio is it's 64% Hispanic, 28% white. I know for a fact it's barely 6% African American. They have one city council district is an African American district. So the city council decided that a lady named Ivy Taylor, who was the one African American member of city council, could serve as the interim mayor because she had indicated she wouldn't run. And they're like, you're never going to get elected, because they knew the battle for mayor was going to be between two Hispanic Democrat titans. Of a guy, state rep named Mike Villarreal, younger generation, Hispanic, more progressive. State senator named Letitia Vandepute, who was the godmother of Latino politics in San Antonio. And so it's just going to be a battle that they were going to figure it out. It's a Democrat city heavily. And so I was just coming off having helped Will Hurd get elected in his district in Texas 23, which was also a majority Hispanic district. And so I got an intro to Ivy Taylor, and I was like, you should consider running. And I put a plan together for her where we built a coalition and we got her in the race, and we ended up making the runoff by getting, I think the results on the first ballot were 30-28-26. And then we won the runoff 52-48. And we actually increased a turnout in the runoff from the first ballot. Now, one of my favorite lines in the San Antonio paper reported that turnout increased and Ivy Taylor won Republican areas heavily up turnout there and her east side predominantly African-American city council district. And we did that by putting together different groups of voters and going to them and saying, hey, look at your options. Like, don't give up. Ivy is reasonable on business. She's reasonable on taxes. Yes, she's a Democrat, but the other options are worse. Mm-hmm. And so I think a lot of times in our business, we look at this as a blue shirt, red shirt, division, subtraction. And don't get me wrong. I mean, a lot of what I do is ads that drive message, put on your jersey, we got to go vote, that kind of stuff. Yep. that I think every now and then we should look at putting together different deals. And so what we did with Ivy was we went to the business community, we went to several Republican elected officials, got them to endorse her, back her, finance her, got the folks in her district to get behind her as well in her city council district. And she got elected mayor, first only African-American mayor of San Antonio, second female mayor of San Antonio. And it was a fun race to be a part of because we got to think about it differently.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes thinking about addition as well as division can be good because, we won World War II with B-17s, ground troops, but also snipers.
That's right.
And so you got to put together kind of a team effort. And that's why I really like kind of taking that to what our business model is. And I think we do great media and content creation. How we deliver that is working with good partners like you and other firms, digital buyers, mail firms, pollsters. And so collaborative approaches in addition, I think, is one thing I think we could lose with this, kind of climate we're heading into. Because to me, not every election is binary. It's not just pick one or the other. So you can add things to those like, well, okay, I kind of like this guy, but I like this guy more because of this issue, and this issue. And so I was fortunate enough to spend some time working in Israel on some elections over there. And nobody gets elected prime minister of Israel outright. You have to build a coalition government every time. And so taking that mentality a little bit, I think, could be helpful. And I think pollsters are a huge advantage there, but using different segments of digital targeting and then where we're headed with media, but especially digital and mail, I think is key to that.
Let me ask you a question.
Go ahead.
Yeah, but to kind of wrap it up a little bit, you talked about mega firms a little earlier, and now you're talking about coalitions at the local level, but you're also talking about collaborations with the campaign teams. Do you think this proliferation in the industry of mega firms is going to hurt collaboration? Meaning, the way you're describing collaboration, you're getting voices from a lot of different teams that are specialists in their thing. Do you think getting voices from just one company is actually bad for campaigns in the industry?
Yeah, well, in the local level, in San Antonio is the seventh largest city in America.
I know, but it's still not a U.S. Senate race. But what I'm talking about even on a big race. Like
to your point, what I would say on that is, I think the team, it should be one team, and that team is the candidate.
Yeah,
and then the candidate needs to have the right leadership of how to build that team like they want. I will say, I don't ever create a team that it's just me doing everything.
Yeah.
Because I want somebody to second guess me or to come up with another idea because we all have a lot of things going on. And so I think not having one firm do everything is a better resource for the candidate. And that's the way we built our business model.
I think so. I think you're right. Well, brother, I appreciate you coming on, man. It's always good to talk to you.
No problem. I look forward to getting to Charleston in a couple of weeks.
Oh, well, come on. Let's hang out.
Oh, I'm going to be there. I'll be there in 2 weeks. I can't stay far away from Charleston.
This is the best time to be in Charleston. Spring, before the summer here, it gets too hot and all the tourists come in. Like, this is by far my favorite time to be in Charleston. Thank you for coming on. Thank you for listening. We can talk about Charleston and have a Charleston podcast. Hold on. I'm gonna hit stop.
Thank you for listening to Campaign War Stories. Please subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also get new episodes sent straight to your inbox by subscribing at WesleyDonahue.com. I hope you have a phenomenal day full of positive vibes.